Coming up in this episode, we learn all about Sidekick and chat to Dr. Stephen Mythen about his new book.
This is Ayla Podcast.
Well, hello, this is Julian Thurgood with This is Ayla.
And Tom O'Farrell.
As you know, This is Ayla tries to bring you a lot of different stories about Ayla and Jura, and the people, places, and events and connections that shape our communities. That's our tagline. This episode contains two subjects that couldn't really be more different in their scope and perspective. We're going to hear from Dr. Stephen Mythen about his new book, The Land of the Illich. And he's going to be talking about the history of Ayla, not just over the last 100 years or 200 years, but from prehistoric times, from the time of the first settlers here. But we'll also be hearing from Gillian Nelson Edwards, who's going to be introducing us to a new charity focused on children with special needs and really focused on the local community.
But first, we have a quick notice from ourselves at This is Ayla. We are holding our first AGM on March the 17th at 7 p.m. via Zoom. This is an open event, so we would like to invite all our listeners to attend. To find out how to do so, check out the description of this episode. Now it is time to head over to Glenn, who is talking to Gillian Nelson Edwards.
Well, it's a new year, and this is our first episode for 2022. I am sure you will all recall in episode 12, I spoke with Joanna Hamilton regarding Father Christmas in Bemore, which has come and gone, I'm afraid. But we'll be ready for Father Christmas this year. In our conversation prior to the recording, Joanna mentioned a charitable organization called Sidekick, which is headed by Mrs. Gillian Nelson Edwards. I caught up with Gillian to find out more from her about Sidekick and its involvement with the local communities of Ayla and Jura in supporting local children and young people. We're now going to welcome Gillian and thank her very much in advance of taking the time out to talk to us. So, Gillian, the floor, as they say, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Glenn, for having me on the podcast. I'm delighted to be here to promote our new charity, albeit in its early infancy. Some time ago, myself, Joanne Hamilton, my sister, Hilary Epps, along with a few other mums, got together with the idea of setting up a local charity to support children and young people with disabilities living on Ayla and Jura. Unfortunately, COVID then got in the way and we never got anything up and running. However, it's a new year and we decided to crack on and get ourselves into gear. Raising children is expensive enough, but as soon as something becomes specialised or sensory related, the cost is more. You can also waste a lot of money purchasing items only to find that the child or young person won't use them. One aspect of the charity is to provide grants for things that might make life easier for individuals, such as local services, funding leisure pursuits, equipment, toys, and devices. However, the list is flexible and led by parents' requests. When we got together to talk about setting up the charity, all of us had friends who had a son or a daughter with a disability or had a child ourselves with a disability, some quite profound. We could also see that opportunities for children and young people with disabilities within our community can be limited. Although we do realise things have been in improving through the work of the swimming pool and other youth services. We wanted to be able to look at projects to further increase this, such as training for parents and families, and increased accessibility to some locations. These were ideas we received from parents in advance. We've been lucky enough to have received a small amount of money to start up, and we hope to increase the funds through some fundraising events later in the year and grant applications. We have a Facebook page, and we'd suggest anyone interested in finding out more information to join our page or just to give me a phone call. My number, my home number, is 01496 810225. We also have an email, which is sidekickcharity@hotmail.com. And that's sort of it for now. I wonder if you have any questions or anything you want to ask me, Glenn.
Yes. We see that it was a new start. Has there nothing been on the island prior to you looking at this?
Not specifically with disabled children and young people in mind. I think everything else has sort of been a sideline of inclusion of everybody, which is why we felt there was a need for this charity, just really to put disability at the forefront, and also really to gather parents' own opinions of what they need. So, you know, we're delighted if people email us with some suggestions. And I do realise that having a disabled child or young person at home does make it difficult to commit to meetings and things, but any amount of involvement that anyone can have would be wonderful.
And I know we mentioned early about Lara Mackay at the McTaggart, as we know it, at the Cyber Cafe in Port Ellen. And I do recall that I was going to send you her email address, which I haven't done. But after the recording, I will send it off to you. I know she's more on the younger generation, but again, I don't think there's been any mention of children with a disability.
Yeah, she has done some good work in setting up a youth club for kids with disabilities. But we're more about just things for the family or say things specifically for these children, not just a sideline.
So it's something that the special equipment, you're looking more at special equipment or things that they need and can't get.
Or as a community, like I said, increasing accessibility. I mean, at the moment, you know, if you had a child or young person that couldn't walk, there's a lot of beaches. In fact, nearly all the beaches you couldn't access. You know, so, a wheelchair you can't use on a beach.
But what about Argyll and Bute Council? I know Robin Curry, as you know, is the leader of the council, and also Anne Horn, who I think is still a member of the council. Have you approached the Argyll and Bute Council in any way?
Not as yet. It has been noted through the emails that we have from people, but also just when you go to Beaumont, you know, the paving for one thing is completely inappropriate if you have somebody in a wheelchair.
But I'm sure the last time you were in Beaumont, you'll see that they are doing a lot of work on the paving, and I have been told that they are going to spend some more time and some more money and some more work, as one might put it, on sorting the pavement out in Beaumont. They're working. And what about wheelchair access? Always seems to be a bone of contention nationwide, as one might say. Do you have any comments from your participants or people you've spoken to raising the question of wheelchair access?
Yeah. That was covered, things like disabled changing facilities. Someone had said that that's quite a struggle in Beaumont. So yeah, there was quite a big list, and some things we don't have a magic wand, but if in any way we can help to make life a little bit easier, then that's great.
And have you, I know at Christmas when we approach or the local businesses are approached, have you in any way brought comments up from or to local businesses who are lack of wheelchair access, or is this a thing for the future?
We haven't, and we want to be careful about stepping on people's toes, really, but you know, that is something that perhaps we can look into. I guess small steps. I mean, something that always also comes to mind is the use of like sensory rooms for children and young people. And I know when my daughter was baby, we used to go to a sensory room, and it was wonderful. And any children with sensory processing difficulties, you know, it's great for them. It's so relaxing. And sometimes as well, at weekends, where do you take your child or young person when it's pouring rain? And it would be great to have these kind of facilities on Isla in the future.
Is this not then necessarily an approach by you to Argyll and Bute Council about this question?
Well, it's a question whether the council would actually, you know, fund things like sensory rooms. Everything is being cut back. So, yep.
But I know what they always say, God loves a trier, so it might be something to look at.
Yes.
And have you looked at, I know when we did the podcast, we approached the lottery funding. Has somebody, it's always a difficult one because it's not a simple thing to fill in the forms.
I think things like the lottery fund, definitely, if we have any big projects, we would need to go for the big ones, really.
Right. I think we will close there. Once again, thank you very much for joining us, or joining me, or us as a podcast team. And we look forward to, no doubt, meeting up again.
Thank you very much, Glenn. I was very apprehensive about coming on the podcast, and you certainly put me at ease. So thank you so much.
We wish Gillian and her team much success in her new venture. And now we're going to join Glenn, who is in a conversation with Stephen Mizen about his new book.
Here we are at the Gaelic Centre, and I have an opportunity to talk to Professor Stephen Mizen, who has just written a book on the land of the Eilleadh. Stephen, welcome, and thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me here at the Gaelic Centre. The book is dedicated to Carl Reavy. We on Isla know Carl Reavy because at one time he was the editor of the Eilleadh and worked at Buchladie Distillery. When did you first meet with Carl?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I imagine it must have been a decade ago or so. Can't remember the year exactly. And he became a great friend and a great inspirational figure. He, of course, had huge interests about the history and the archaeology of Isla, but also many of other interests like bird watching and whiskey and cycling. And they all overlap with my interests as well. And I found him a hugely inspirational character. And I was so sad when he passed away before his time. And I was so delighted to be able to dedicate my book, Land of the Eilleadh, to Carl.
As a regular visitor to Isla, when was your first visit to Isla?
I first came to Isla in 1986. And I came up while I was doing my PhD at the University of Cambridge because I thought that I wanted to do some archaeological research on Isla, looking into its early Mesolithic inhabitants. And since that time, I've been coming back most years, not every year. A few years, I couldn't come because I was working elsewhere in the world. And obviously, like everybody else, grew a love for the island. My family came with me most times, and we had many happy holidays here, as well as undertaking many excavations. And a few years ago, I bought a house on the island, so I now live up here for as long periods as I can do. I have a job down at University of Reading, so I can't be here all the time. So it's a marvellous place that has a deep place in my heart, and also is hugely interesting from a historical and archaeological point of view. And it's those two things that I really wanted to blend in the book, both the history of the Isla, and my book's called The Land of the Illich. It's about the people of Isla. I like to contrast it with David Caldwell's book that was called Land of the Lordship, because that suggests it's all about the lords and the ladies and the lairds. I wanted to write about the people of Isla who had formed and developed the landscape. And as I was writing about them, I wanted to do it in a way where I could also write about the modern landscape. What it's like to visit archaeological sites, historic sites, the landscapes, the weather, the modern farming economy, and all of that, which combines to make this wonderful experience of being on the island. And the thing about Isla is where it's positioned, is right positioned between the mainland of Britain and Scotland and Ireland, just 25 miles away. It's on that western seaway, which is the highway throughout prehistory and much of history. So it's right at the crux of all these interactions going on, which is why it has such a rich past. So it may be a small island, but it's right a node for communications in the ancient world, which makes it such a fascinating, exciting place.
And the culture of the island, which you do go into in the book, do you find this island and its culture different to the other islands within Scotland?
Yeah, I've worked and got to know a few islands, as well as Isla. I've undertaken excavations on Colonsay and Tyree and Col and Mull. All the islands are very different, remarkably different. And I have a great affection for all of them. I think Isla, because it's relatively large, relatively fertile, it has a richer archaeological and historical past than perhaps some of the other islands, which has made it more engaging for me to write about. I think Isla almost captures a microcosm for the history of not only Scotland, but also of Great Britain or the United Kingdom as a whole. It's a fantastic case study for those bigger themes, rather than just a little island story. Most of my research has been on the earliest prehistory, on the Mesolithic and the Neolithic periods, that's the early hunter-gatherers and the early farmers. But over the years, I gradually became interested in the later prehistory on the island, the standing stones and the dunes and the hill forts and then the chapels. And also, of course, the deserted farmsteads, the deserted townships, especially down in the O. So they've also grasped my imagination as well. When I embarked on the book, I was initially thinking of keeping it just to prehistory. And I'd got to about 80,000 words, which I thought was long enough for the book. And I said to the publisher, I said, "There you are, there's a book about the prehistory of Isla." And the editor, he said, "No, carry on going. I want the whole business, so the whole thing all the way through." I said, "Well, I'm not sure I'm qualified to do that." "No, just carry on." So I carried on writing, carried on visiting sites, carried on researching, so I could do and end up doing a complete archaeological history of the island. And I'm really delighted that I did, because the archaeology of the early Christians on Isla, the Vikings on the Norse, and then, of course, the MacDonald Lordship of the Isles, and then the archaeology about the development of the early industry, like the mining and the flax industry and the woolen industry, that has left wonderful archaeological sites around the island. So I was glad that the publishers pushed me to do that second half of the history of the island. It's resulted in quite a long book, but I think it's great having it all between just two covers.
But you also have the students over from Reading University. And I know we were talking before the recording that Andrew Skelton, who again is from Sweden, although he's a Scotsman, he brings his students over. But there must be something for you're both doing different areas. But I noticed that he was
talking to me about a year ago about the Ice Age.
Mm.
And I note that on my notes, which tells me how soon after the retreat of the ice were the settlements on Isla.
Mm. Mm. Well, the ice sheets had probably left Isla by 15,000 years ago, leaving the island covered in tundra. And then gradually grasses and herbs colonised, and then early trees such as pine and birch. And we think at around 12,000 years ago, the first people set foot on Isla. They were Ice Age hunter-gatherers who had, I think, travelled around the north coast of Scotland, originally coming from the now submerged landscape of Doggerland, which once joined Britain to the continent, to Denmark. And I think we've found traces of them at a site that I'm still excavating at Roof of Port and Salloch, just south of Port Askeig. Been excavating that for a few years, and each year I bring some of my University of Reading students up to help with the excavation, and we teach them about excavation methods as part of their studying. And of course, when those students come up, they also get to learn about the island as well. They get to learn about the landscape, the economy, the whiskey, these rural landscapes that I think are so such an important part of Britain. And they've fallen in love with the island as well. And some of them have been coming back with me year after year.
And do you always get this reaction, as I once got, is Isla, where's that?
yeah, initially. but you know, I've now probably brought hundreds of students to Isla over the years, and quite a few of my academic colleagues as well. So Isla's got very well known in my university now, so I don't have to explain it to them at all.
And how do you find with the other universities on the mainland when you're going through, when you're researching, like Oxford, Cambridge, do you feed the knowledge that you obtained into these other universities?
Yeah, I mean, I when I undertake excavations or do research about Isla, I publish in two ways. I publish lots in academic journals, and they are for other academics to read, not only in the UK, across the world. So they are, you know, quite, for a layperson, they'd be quite difficult to read. They've got very technical jargon in, there's a lot of science in them. So I've published many of those over the years. And so Isla's got quite well known. It's got quite a good reputation as being a centre of Oxford research because of this work we've produced. And my colleagues as well, like Darko Marisevic, who comes and works on Isla as well. But what this book is trying to do is trying to make all of that information accessible to a non-academic readership. Because not just me, but there's been many archaeologists who've come and excavated on Isla over the years, either to do rescue excavations when sites are being destroyed by storms and so forth, or to do research. Sites such as Kultun Stone Circle was excavated in the 1970s. Much of that work was never made available to the local people on Isla or to a wider public. So what I've tried to do in Land of the Illic is put all of that information in what I hopefully is a fairly accessible, readable way to a non-academic to tell people what's been discovered in these sites and how it fits into the bigger story of the history of Britain and indeed of Europe more generally. Archaeological research is constantly developing with new methods and new techniques. And the biggest revolution that's happened in the last decade in archaeological historical research is with the use of genetics. We can now take skeletal remains from the archaeological record and extract their ancient DNA and compare that with skeletons from elsewhere. And this is really transforming the discipline and a whole understanding of the past. And it's relevant to Isla. There's not been any ancient DNA work done on Isla, but there has been in the region of Western Scotland. So this has been able to tell us, for instance, that the earliest Neolithic people or the development of the Neolithic farming in Ireland, Western Scotland, arose by the immigration of people coming here who had their origins in the southern Mediterranean, and they travelled up through France and then they colonised Britain, including Western Scotland. And then that was at around 6,000 years ago. Then around 4,500 years ago, we had another wave of immigrants coming in, which were Bronze Age people, who had also spread right across Europe. So this new data about migrations that is based on genetic evidence has been appearing over the last 3 or 4 years. So as I've been writing the book, I've kept having to draw on that very latest research to include it. And it's ended up making a much more rigorous story than it would have been otherwise. But of course, there might be something published next year or the year after that will change the story once again. So one has to keep writing and keep publishing.
And I notice on reading the book, you have a lot of help from people on the island. I note that Margaret's story has been mentioned more than once in the book. How did you meet with this lady and what information was she...
Well, I can't remember how I originally met Margaret, but I've known her for many years. And of course, she wrote what I think is a truly remarkable book, The Biography of the Island. And that must... I can't remember when that initially came out, but it was a fantastic bit of historical scholarship, working through lots of documentary evidence, mainly covering the period of the Lairds, the last perhaps 200 years of Isla. And Margaret's been a good friend ever since and has often inspired me and provoked me to go off and do some of my own archaeological research. But she's just one of many, many people on the island who have always shown huge support, interest and kindness for my archaeological work. It wouldn't be right to mention everyone, but Malcolm Ogilvy I've known ever since I first came in 1986.
Well, I always thought Malcolm, who we know as a bird man, not necessarily, I don't mean the bird man, but I know when we're planning something new on the island, we always consult with Malcolm regarding the flight of the birds, the flight path they're using.
Yeah, but yes, that's right. But he's got a huge range of interests on Isla. And he's of course been a trustee of the museum for many years. Mm-hmm. And I think he was chair of the museum for many years. And because many parts of Isla are sites of scientific interest and so forth, he's also been able to advise me about where I can go and get permissions from and so forth. But I'm also interested in the bird life of Isla. How could you not be? So just having Malcolm as a friend and talking to him has been absolutely fantastic.
And when you're out and about, how do you find the local community reacting to the work you're doing?
Yeah, well, the vast majority are hugely supportive and interest. I mean, who could not be interested in the historical past? The majority provide excellent access to archaeological sites and so forth. There's a few exceptions, and I think you need to respect their right for privacy and so forth. And fortunately, there's lots of other work to do where some access to some sites has been challenging in the past. But broadly, I don't think you could possibly imagine a kinder and a more interested community on an island that I've found an Isla over the years.
I know that the book launches at the Gaelic Centre tomorrow, but the book is available at Roy's in Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Do you know what response you're getting?
No, I don't know. I mean, I write the books, and then it's for publishers to sell them. Of course, I look up for reviews, and there was a really splendid review in the Scotsman newspaper soon after it came out. So. I think it's best for me to write the book and enjoy it and let other people worry about sales and so forth. Of course, I hope it sells well, and I hope it meets people's interests and helps them understand the island and they enjoy the reading. But I'm not one to cling on to sales figures and so forth. That's the publisher's business to do, not mine.
And what's the plan for the future?
Well, I want to continue doing archaeological research on the island. And of course, not only archaeological research, but there's also public engagement. A few years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, I was one of the people who founded the Isla Heritage Charity. And we now have a board of trustees. And over the years, we've done lots of community events about the archaeology. So when we were digging at Dunuvig Castle, we had open days for the schools, and we had events like medieval cooking and archery based down there. I've done lots of public talks around the island, and I want to continue that public engagement with the archaeology by working with a charity as much as doing my own research. What I really want to do in the future is to find the Vikings on Isla. Now, the Vikings are, of course, present on Isla through the burials at Ballon Abbey and through so many place names on Isla, but nobody's ever found a Viking settlement on the island. And that's my ambition over the next few years, to find a Viking settlement, a Norse period settlement on the island that we can excavate. So I have a new project I'm hoping to begin next summer. Still just got to raise some funding and get the final permissions and so forth, which will be excavating at a site where I think we might find a Viking period farmstead. So I want to continue what I've been doing for the last 30 years of enjoying the island, undertaking research, writing about it for both my academic peers, but also for the people of the island and everybody who enjoys coming to the island to visit.
Stephen, thank you very much. We are very appreciative of you spending the time and talking to us, and may we wish you all the best for the future.
Well, thank you very much, Glenn. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Well, personally, I think it's really interesting to have that broad perspective on the people who have settled in Isla and the different aspects of life over many thousands of years.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. Unfortunately, though, that is all we have time for in this episode. Just a quick reminder that we are holding our AGM on the 17th, and all are welcome to attend. If you'd like to find out more about Sidekick or Stephen Mythen's book, then the details are in the episode's description and on our website. We are also on the lookout for your Isla and Jura stories. You can email them to thisisisla@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on social media, on Facebook at This Is Isla, on Twitter at This Is Isla, and on Instagram at This Is Isla Podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of This Is Isla Podcast. Our theme song is Swift Pound Cashback by Fraser Collins.